from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're all the same. It's all the same. It's all the same. Everything's of a piece. That's a kind of an oceanic sentiment with which to begin the broadcast today. But look, I'll back it up. I got stuff printed on very nice paper today. Thank you to the paper suppliers. See if this sounds familiar. The Bush administration violated two federal laws through part of its publicity campaign to promote changes in Medicare. The General Accounting Office, an arm of Congress, which is controlled by the Republicans, interesting, concluded that the Department of Health and Human Services illegally spent federal money on what amounted to covert propaganda by producing videos about the Medicare changes that were made to look like news reports. You've heard about these before. Right here, on this broadcast. Portions of the videos, which have been aired by 40 television stations around the country, do not make it clear that the announcers were paid by the federal government and were not real reporters. You know, it's sad enough, the status of real television reporters these days, ladies and gentlemen. These weren't even them. This wasn't even Kent Shocknick. That's how low we're talking. The 16-page legal opinion says that Health and Human Services video news releases violated a statute that forbids the use of federal money for propaganda, as well as the Anti-Deficiency Act, which covers the unauthorized use of federal funds. The finding does not carry legal force. The GAO acts only as an advisor to Congress, but Democrats are trying to get the money back. And see if this sounds like part of a larger fabric. Agriculture Department officials have acknowledged that the agency quietly and improperly allowed millions of pounds of Canadian processed beef into the United States, despite a ban against importing that type of meat. Clearly, the process and our failure to announce some of these actions was flawed, says the USDA's chief vet. He said the decision to allow in selected Canadian processed beef, mainly ground beef and sausage. Hey, Canadian sausage. Let's smoke up some right now. What do you say? Was scientifically sound and the meat was safe. A ban on Canadian beef was put in place last May after mad cow disease was found in the Canadian herd. The Congress took the agency to task. The USDA officials admitted mistakes were made. Passive voice. The secretary was saying one thing and something different was happening. When you have a policy that isn't being carried out, you have a problem, said a House Democrat. Well, of course he's going to say that. During a teleconference, officials of the United States Department of Agriculture, here's the part that really rings a big old bell in the everything's the same department. USDA officials said that Secretary of Agriculture Ann Veneman knew nothing about the imports of processed beef from Canada, and the permits were approved by lower-level officials. The government being run by the lower level, ladies and gentlemen, that's the deal. So when you're voting this December, November, whenever it is, you're voting for the lower level. Don't worry about the name at the top. They don't know. And further on these sense that we're all the same. You know, the American people have taken a lot of heat for our prudery, our putative puritanical nature during this time. When the FCC is cracking down and everybody's putting in 7-second delay, and it's not just us, ladies and gentlemen. Here to tell you, it's not just us. A film encouraging people to vote in the upcoming European elections has been censored for British viewers because it showed a glimpse
of a nipple.
Now, I'm just protecting your ears there, of a nipple. The Cinema Advertising Association sent it back to European headquarters in Brussels for editing. I want to be one of those editors in Brussels, don't you? The producers who made the film on behalf of the European Parliament were surprised that the British should have such strong feelings. The advertisement will be shown in its entirety in many other European countries. See? Old Europe. Like to look at nipples. Originally, the nipple appeared in a brief sequence showing a baby trying to make up its mind about breastfeeding. The film is intended to show that people have to make choices. So the Brits will be saved from having to look at the offending object. Ladies and gentlemen, we are all the same. That's the good news and the bad news. Hello, welcome to the show.
Oh, dear Janet Jackson, you don't know me, but I saw you on the telly. You were wobbling like a jelly when you gave that song some welly. Though I couldn't help but notice there that you've got a pair of beauties. And if your other duties as a diva give you your time, well, there's lots of hungry babes out there that need something to chew. And your role as a wet nurse might be just the thing for you. If you must shove your titty in somebody's face, shove it in the babies, shove it in the babies, shove it in the babies. If you must shove your titty in somebody's face, shove it in the babies. Oh, tits are a tease, a fun to squeeze, but babies need them too. When you flashed your titty at the Super Bowl, I hope it was a plastic, or silicon, or elastic, or anything that drastic. It looked fantastic. And you flashed your titty at the Super Bowl, I hope it was a plastic, 'cause I've heard tell for babies, world, them implants just won't do. When you shoved that spike right through your nipple, ouch, I hope you didn't burst it. I hope you didn't burst it. I hope you didn't burst it. When you shoved that spike right through your nipple, oh, I hope you didn't burst it. Can't have it leaking all down the sides when you're feeding a kid or two. That's what they're there for. That's what they're there for. Who are we to ask the why or wherefore? That's what they're there for. That's what they're there for. Oh, tits are a tease and fun to squeeze, but babies need them too. When you're sick of all that dancing around, you'll make a lovely mother. Kids are such a pleasure, just ask your brother. When you're sick of all that dancing around, I hope you have a dozen. The sleepovers at Neverland will be strictly taboo. All together now. If you must shove your titty in somebody's face, shove it in the babies, shove it in the babies, shove it in the babies. If you must shove your titty in somebody's face, oh, shove it in the babies, 'cause tits are a tease, a fun to squeeze, but babies need them too. That's what they're there for. That's what they're there for. And who are we to ask the why? Oh, wherefore? That's what they're there for. That's what they're there for. Oh, tits are a tease, a fun to squeeze, but babies need them
days that I've been missing. Give me the taste, give me the joy of summer wine. These are the days that bring you meaning. I feel the stillness of the sun and I feel fine. Sometimes when the nights are closing early, I remember you and I start to smile. Even though now you don't want to know me, I get on by and I go the extra mile. These are the times of love and meaning. Eyes of the heart,
melted away and found the light. These are the days of endless dreaming, troubles of life floating away like a bird in flight. These are the days, these are the days, these are the days. Hey. Oh. Thought you said our love would last forever, believing that the tears would end for good. I told you that we'd get through any weather. Maybe that didn't work out, but we did the best we could. These are the days that I've been missing. Give me the taste, give me the joy of summer wine. These are the days that bring new meaning. I feel the stillness of the sun, and I feel fine.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, newly reaffirmed as the home of the homeless by bloggers throughout Southern California, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the show. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's follow up, first of all, on some stuff from last week. And it's unpleasant stuff. I mentioned on last week's broadcast that I was unable to look at that video that had been circulating on the internet of the beheading, the beheading of Nicholas Berg. And I said to listeners, if you want to go look at it and tell me what you think, I'll be interested in your response. The consensus from those people who did that was, I'd say, about between 65-35 and 70-30, that they thought they were looking at something real and authentic. A couple people berated me for making the suggestion. I berated them right back. We berate to this day. Now, this comes from the Asian Times, which is not a blog and is in business, as far as I know, in Asia, putting out news. Says Dr. John Simpson, Executive Director for Surgical Affairs at the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons, quote, I would certainly need to be convinced the video was authentic. Forensic death expert John Nordby, fellow of the American Board of Medico-Legal Death Investigators, I've never heard of that, says, I think the accusation that the video has been staged is the best explanation of it. All right, what's all this about? Questions of when the video's footage was taken and the time elapsed between the shooting of the video segments were raised by both experts. There's no way of knowing, says Nordby, whether footage is contemporaneous with the footage that follows. A factor. Both Simpson and Nordby perceive it as highly probable that Berg had died sometime prior to his decapitation. A factor in this was an apparent lack of the massive arterial bleeding such an act initiates. Sorry, that's the fact. I would have thought that all the people in the vicinity would have been covered in blood in a matter of seconds if it was genuine, said Simpson. Notably, the act's perpetrators appeared far from so, although a lot of listeners said, well, there was a lot of stuff on the floor, but the resolution wasn't very good, so he couldn't tell. Looked like the floor was stained. there are other telltale signs, which I'm going to spare you, ladies and gentlemen, but they have to do with how bodies react when you do this act. There are also questions about the accents of the people who are speaking on the tape. And the fact that Berg is seen in the beheading videotape in what appears to be U.S. military prison-issue clothing, the orange jumpsuit, sitting in what appears to be a U.S. military-type white chair virtually identical to those photographed at Abu Ghraib prison. So there is some Nordby's summation. The video raises more questions than it answers. Ladies and gentlemen. All right, enough of that. Let's move to more pleasant material. Dear Harry, $1 per very small banana at the American Physical Society Conference at the Adams Mark Hotel in Denver. I bought one anyway with a $2 cup of decaf. So $1 for a very small banana. That's in the running. It's certainly among the more expensive bananas in the world. Whether it's the most expensive, ladies and gentlemen, I just don't know. Oh, the phone's ringing. That's interesting. We're on the radio. Call back, please. You'll get your answer. All right. It does look, aside from the previous material, which is not being covered, as far as I know, by a lot of the mainstream American press, Asia Times, ladies and gentlemen, go check it out. But the bubble does appear to be bursting. We do appear to be, and it appears to be bursting all over the head of Ahmed Chalabi. But, so who is Ahmed Chalabi? And why didn't we know more about him? Well, we did, but we'll get to that. Other material from the front or the back of our war. One of Australia's largest post-war contracts in Iraq has collapsed, with the partners embroiled in a multi-million-dollar legal battle and allegations of corruption in the awarding of contracts by a leading Pentagon supplier. You're kidding me. Morris Corporation, a Queensland catering company that has delivered meals to the armed forces from Somalia to Cambodia, was dumped last year by Halliburton, losing a $100 million contract. They won the contract just last June in partnership with a Kuwaiti company. The deal was praised by the Australian government as a signal that Australian companies would get fair treatment in contracting. They got the contract. U.S. company Halliburton quietly canceled the deal 6 weeks later, saying that Morris and its Kuwaiti partner had not met their allegations. Now an insider involved in the deal alleges that the joint venture was approached by a Halliburton employee seeking kickbacks worth up to $3 million during the contract negotiations. This is a part of a messy legal brawl, ladies and gentlemen, which, you know, I would say if we leave Iraq with a legacy of messy legal brawls, we really have given them what they need for a modern American-style democracy. I know elections are nice, but messy legal brawls are really what it's all about. Also from down under, the Australian government aided and abetted the torture of a Sydney man after he was sent to Egypt with the complicity of Australian officials and given electric shocks, beaten and interrogated at gunpoint. That's lawyer says that. He's a lawyer. Why wouldn't he say that? Other allegations and the alligators who allegate them. U.S. forces beat three Iraqis working for Reuters News Service and subjected them to sexual and religious taunts and humiliation during their detention last January in a military camp near Fallujah. Fallujah, according to the three this week. Now, that would be a different camp. That would not be Abu Ghraib. More bad apples, ladies and gentlemen. More bad orchards. The three told Reuters of the ordeal after their release, but only decided to make it public when the U.S. military said there was no evidence they were abused. An Iraqi journalist working for NBC, who was arrested with the Reuters staff, also said he had been beaten and mistreated. Two of the three Reuters staff said they had been forced to insert a finger into an interesting part of their body and then lick it, and were forced to put shoes in their mouths, particularly humiliating in Arab culture. All three said they were forced to make demeaning gestures as soldiers laughed, taunted them, and took photographs. They said they did not want to give details publicly earlier because of the degrading nature of the abuse. The U.S. military, in a report issued before the Abu Ghraib abuse became public, said there was no evidence the Reuters staff had been tortured or abused. I have to say, Reuters said Simpson's cast was on strike, and we weren't, so the Pentagon has yet to respond to a request by Reuters to review the military's findings about the incident. A Pentagon spokesman this week said there are a number of lines of inquiry underway with respect to prison operations in Iraq. This was Forward Operating Base Volturno near Fallujah. They were released without charge on January 5th after their fun time. Soldiers had told one of the reporters, who has better English than the others, that they wanted to have sex with him. That's nice. NBC's Stringer reported a hood was placed over his head for hours, and he was forced to perform physically debilitating exercises and struck and kicked several times. Just apples, ladies and gentlemen. It's not even soldiers doing this. It's apples. Autopsies were not performed on at least five Iraqi prisoners who died of mysterious causes at Abu Ghraib and other detention camps, according to Pentagon records retrieved by the Denver Post, of all places. The lack of forensic investigations may conflict with international standards, including the Geneva Conventions for the handling of war detainee deaths. Among the cases is a prisoner who died, the records show, after gasping for air. Asthma. Another detainee who had prior head injuries fell out of a hospital bed and struck his head on the floor. One prisoner began having chest pains and collapsed. Diet. Synopses of the death investigations. I was having a synaptical problem on synapses. Synopses of the death investigations, which do not disclose whether the prisoners were interrogated, are enclosed in documents obtained by the Denver Post from a high-level Pentagon source this week. The deaths are all characterized as having undetermined causes. Pentagon spokesman declined to comment on the cases. Oh, to be a Pentagon spokesman these days. That'd be a good gig. There are deaths of five other prisoners being investigated. Autopsies were done on those deaths. Three of them died after being suffocated, according to the autopsies. Well, why would you want to have more autopsies when it shows things like that? That would be, I would say, good motivation. One case involved the November killing of an Iraqi general who was smothered in a sleeping bag after a military intelligence officer sat on his chest. These are just apples, ladies and gentlemen, doing this. Just apples. Apples are do you notice that apples are the most mischievous of all fruit? That's scientific fact. The total of deaths being investigated is now up to 37 detainees held in U.S. custody in both Iraq and Afghanistan. I didn't even know apples were in Afghanistan. The Pentagon said the list of deaths included at least eight unsolved murders, which may have involved assaults that took place during interrogation. A total of 33 separate cases, some involve more than one death. That includes the sleeping bag guy. So, what do we have here? We have Ahmed Chalabi and the roof. Or a roof falling in. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've said to, I think, the readers of the email blast that comes from this program on a very occasional basis, to which you can subscribe by just sending an email to leblast, LEBLAST hyphen subscribe at luxmedia.com. Com? I hope so. That the whole Iraqi thing is going to boil down to two words. Neat or mess. If it's believed to be neat, just hung up on them. If it's believed to be neat, then the administration wins, and George W. Bush probably gets a second term. If it's believed to be a mess, then that's the end of that deal. And it's really, it's as simple as that. Neat or mess. So when you hear people saying, we're not hearing enough of the good news means neat. We got in, did a nice thing, got out. Mess means, oh, really, that sound. That would be mess. So that, just view it all in that context. And I believe it was mentioned here as early as last August or September that the real war was now being fought between at least parts of the administration and the intelligence community, as they like to be known. Wouldn't you like to live in the intelligence community? It's gated, but you can't see the gates. And the war continues. Ahmed Chalabi is saying all these charges are the fault of the CIA. Well, who would know more about Ahmed Chalabi than the CIA? He was the guy that was sending all the people over to be debriefed. And it was the CIA who was saying, don't believe these guys. And these guys were believed. The White House said this week, it remains unclear whether the CIA was wrong about those mobile bioweapons labs, even though Secretary of State Powell has already said, oops, my bad. Scott McLennan, the White House says, still not clear why Iraq had the rolling labs. An independent commission appointed by the president to look at pre-war intelligence would take another look at those labs. Powell did express regret on last Sunday's Meet the Press for UN Security Council speech, now known to have been, in his words, inaccurate and wrong. It turned out, says Powell, that the sourcing was inaccurate and wrong, and in some cases deliberately misleading. And for that, I am disappointed, and I regret it. CIA Director George Tenet had warned Dick Cheney not to be categorical in referring to the evidence of the mobile labs as conclusive evidence of bio-war stuff. So, this may be just a war between the CIA and old people around Dick Cheney, let's say. Let's just say. We don't even really know, judging by news reports, how much money Ahmed Chalabi's Iraqi National Congress has gotten from the United States government over the years. The printed, published figures have ranged in the last few days as the Chalabi feast has gone ballistic, from $18 million to $40 million. You'd think that math would be easy to do, but journalists aren't good at math. Congress watchdog, that General Accounting Office we referred to earlier, is investigating whether some of the money, however much it is, that you and I paid to the Iraqi National Congress, was used by the group and its U.S. consultants to lobby the government for an invasion and to plant articles in the media. Both actions would violate U.S. law. There's that nutty word again. By the way, Ahmed Chalabi has been a fugitive from justice in Jordan since his conviction in absentia in 1992 for bank fraud that led to the collapse of that country's second largest bank. This may explain why, according to the New York Post, of all papers, owned by Rupert Murdoch, Jordan's King Abdullah lit the fuse that blew up under Ahmed Chalabi this week by providing bombshell intelligence that his group was spying for Iran. The Jordanian monarch brought the dossier with him to the White House sessions with President Bush. It detailed mafia-style extortion rackets and secret information on U.S. military operations being passed to Iran. The file was compiled by Jordan's intelligence service, which has had an interest in him since his conviction for bank fraud way back when. Now, supposedly, according to the Los Angeles dog trainer, Chalabi sent Iraqi defectors to at least 8 Western spy services before the war in an apparent effort to dupe them about the weapons of mass destruction. U.S. investigators are seeking to determine whether the effort was secretly supported by Iran's intelligence service to help persuade the Bush administration to oust its longtime enemy in Baghdad. One U.S. official likened Chalabi's efforts to trying to game the system. The point being, he was sending defectors to several intelligence services with basically the same story so that when the intelligence services checked with each other, oh, it's multi-sourced. Here's what Ahmed Chalabi told the London newspaper The Telegraph back in February of this year, shrugging off the charges that he had deliberately misled U.S. intelligence. Quote, we are heroes in error. As far as we're concerned, we've been entirely successful. The tyrant Saddam is gone and the Americans are in Baghdad. What was said before is not important. The Bush administration is looking for a scapegoat. We're ready to fall on our swords if he wants, unquote. Doesn't look too ready to fall on his sword right now, ladies and gentlemen. Or maybe he is. Maybe it's an act. Who knows? The Bush administration publicized the claims of an Iraqi defector months after he showed deception in a lie detector test and had been rejected as unreliable by U.S. intelligence agencies. He said he'd worked at illegal chemical, biological, and nuclear facilities around Baghdad. But when members of the Iraqi survey group, run by the CIA, took him back to Iraq earlier this year, he pointed out facilities known to be associated with conventional Iraqi military. He couldn't identify a single site associated with illegal weapons. The overall impression was he was trying to pass information far beyond his area of expertise. Not clear from this report whether he was sent by Chalabi or not. But so many of them were to this and other countries. So, ladies and gentlemen, now Chalabi, it should be pointed out on the Sunday Yak shows where he, I think, got on every one this week, denied that he ever talked or had an interview with the London newspaper, The Telegraph, in which he gave the quote, "We are heroes in error." And then he said right afterwards, "We were just having a cocktail. We were just having cocktails." So it wasn't an interview. He was just having cocktails. It's a remarkable turn of events, and we may have to get a little beneath the surface, if not of the story, at least of the planet. And we'll do that moments from now here on Le Show.
My life is so much better. Thought that I'd be weak without you, but I'm stronger. Thought that I'd be broke without you, but I'm richer. Thought that I'd be sad without you, laugh harder. Thought that I wouldn't grow without you, now I'm wiser. Thought that I'd be helpless without you, but I'm smarter. Thought that I'd be stressed without you, but I'm chilling. Thought that I would sell without you, so I'm a million. I'm a survivor, not gonna give up. Not gonna stop, we're gonna work harder. I'm a survivor, I'm gonna make it. I'm a survivor, keep on surviving. Thought that I can breathe without you, I'm inhaling. Thought that I can see without you, perfect vision. Thought that I can last without you, but I'm lasting. Thought that I would die without you, but I'm living. Thought that I would fail without you, but I'm on top. Thought that it'd be over by now, but I won't stop. Thought that I would self-destruct, but I'm still here. Even in my years to come, I'm gonna be here. I'm a survivor, not gonna give up, not gonna stop, we're gonna work harder. I'm a survivor, I'm gonna make it. I'm a survivor, keep on surviving. I'm wishing you the best, pray that you are blessed. Much success, no stress and happiness. Blast you on the radio. I'm not gonna lie to you, your family, yo. I'm not gonna hate you in the magazine. I'm not gonna compromise my Jewish history. Not gonna diss you on the internet. Cause my mama taught me better than that. I'm a survivor, not gonna give up. Not gonna stop, we're gonna work harder. I'm a survivor, I'm gonna make it. I'm a survivor, keep on surviving. I'm a survivor, not gonna give up.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's less than a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 As the window until the handover of sovereignty to our Iraqi friends becomes shorter than one of my lesbian daughter's love affairs, a certain likeness of spirit seems to inhabit the secure, undisclosed lifestyle. Maybe it's just the sense that after June 30th, the steady media drumbeat of so-called bad news from Iraq will fade down to a soft set of brushes and the symbols of the American summertime. Maybe it's the hope that the public will then say of Iraq, as a youthful Dick Cheney said of Vietnam, we have other priorities. In any case, that virtual springtime of the soul didn't last long this week. Oh, sure, I was having a high old time with the surreptitious side of the campaign to housebreak John McCain. I was given briefings on our concern that McCain might be Kerry's running mate to some reporter friends, on background so deep it would give Costeau the bends. When suddenly got a red alert from Don Rumsfeld's office. I left our media friends alone with an open bottle of Jack Daniels and hopped some secure and disclosed transport down to my old stomping grounds. Little pile across the river called the Pentagon. Rumsfeld was waiting for me, gladder to tell me bad news than he should have been. Thursday, 7:14 a.m.
Sorry to embed you in my world so early in the day.
No, it's okay, Don. Just trying to give our friend McCain something more to deny. What's up? New Al Grabe photos? Soldiers mating prisoners with sheep? What kind of shop you running over here, anyway?
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, as of about 20 minutes ago, we're running a shop with a little less baggage to haul around.
Pushing Wolfowitz out the hatch? Not a very savvy move, Don. He's got friends in secure and disclosed places.
Are you through? Of course we're not pushing Wolfowitz out of anything. My goodness, Dick, sometimes I wonder whether all my mentoring of you went in one wing and out the other. Goodness gracious, no. No, the Iraqi police have raided Chalabi's place. He's officially off the reservation. I'm just giving you a heads up in case he calls your helpline.
Don, can I sit down?
I try and keep some military discipline in here nowadays. I'd appreciate if you keep standing up.
Okay, we'll play it your way. But look here, my friend, the cornerstone of our shop has been discipline. And I don't mean the standing up in your office kind of discipline. I mean keeping a solid front, maintaining message consistency, and ruthlessly suppressing contrary indicators kind of discipline. Once we start the finger pointing, my friend, I think we're all going to start running out of fingers.
Look, this isn't my operation.
No, I heard. It's the Iraqi police.
Yeah. And,
they're famous for their independence. They're like the Mod Squad on steroids.
No, it's true. They're the people Halliburton wouldn't hire as security guards. But look, CIA and state got to Condi with new information about Chalabi's Iranian friends. Colin was sick about having to apologize for Chalabi's intel. Justice chimed in with concerns about the old Saddam files that he has and we want, and
nobody bothered to put me in the loop.
Well,
what am I, suddenly some sort of, you should pardon the expression, vice president?
Look, the guy was a looser cannon than Tom DeLay in a termite tent. We stick with Chalabi. Who knows what happens? Maybe he does somehow get to run the place, and before you know it, we have to come back in and topple his statue. Who wants that?
Don, I hate to repeat myself, but sometimes on this Iraqi account, I start to think maybe that's my job. I said it when you cut Chalabi's funding off last week. I'll say it again right now. It's easier to control this guy when he still has to show up once a month for the rent money. Maybe write it down this time. Because last time I looked, there's some secure undisclosed fingers that can start pointing your way, too.
Dick, my young friend, I've survived my walk of fire. The Senate's had three cracks at me, and we're going to start cranking out court-martials like cases before Judge Judy. And the one thing the president knows he doesn't need at this time is my book coming out anytime soon.
Okay, Don, look, full disclosure time. I know our friend Mr. Chalabi is a world-class sleazebag. Big news. Last time I looked around the players in this league, they don't draft any saints, so no big loss in the moral clarity department. But my aide Scooter's been a big supporter of the man. He's going to be pretty upset about all this. Think he could at least take possession of the old Saddam files, just for sentimental value.
Oh, my Dick, I think those files are going someplace where only J. Edgar Hoover can find them. Doug Feith's office downstairs. Frankly, Mr. Vice President, although nobody asked me, I think your first mistake was having an aide named Scooter, don't you?
You always did play a fine game of hardball.
Well, I couldn't help it. My hands were just too small for softball. You know the way out.
Even in the old days, I thought Don was the kind of guy who could slice off your nuts and 2 days later you're still walking around thinking you were fully packed. Seems like I learned everything from him, except how to deal with him. Sure enough, our erstwhile friend was not opting for the quiet return to a life of buying handmade suits in London. So before I could even phone Lynn to tell her how much I was enjoying her new book, A Lesson Plan for Creationism, my Secret Service detail was whisking me off on a secret mission to Baghdad. Friday, 10:48 a.m., Iraqi daylight time.
This was the home entertainment center. Ruined. I had Middle East's largest DVD collection. Over half of them clean.
Yeah, you think you have it rough. It's an 18-hour flight over here. You know what the only movie was on the plane? Fahrenheit 911.
You people really are disorganized.
Tell me about it.
Look, they took all my Hummel figurines. Those were on the first plane full of my people the Pentagon flew in after the war. Now, who knows where they are?
Well, they're still in office, aren't they?
Not the people, the figurines.
I think we have the technology to track the Hummels.
This frame they smashed? It had the photo of me sitting behind Laura Bush at the State of the Union. It was autographed.
By Laura Bush?
By the man who framed it. But still, I have been America's best friend. This cannot be the way you treat your friends.
All right, Mr. Chalabi, can we sit down?
They smashed the chairs.
Okay, sir, let's be the grown-ups we said we were going to be when we said we were elected. You think America's treating a friend badly? Sir, you could be in a lot worse shape right about now. You could be Manuel Noriega. Now look, I'm still your friend. It's not Scooter and me who've sold you out. I fought harder to keep this from happening than I fought to keep my own energy task force meeting secret.
Great. So that's it. Good luck, Ahmad. Stay in touch and stay out of Jordan.
Ahmad, have you read today's polls? Since the raid, your favorable rating in this country has gone up 20%. Instead of complaining about being off our payroll, spend your last Pentagon check buying ads bragging about being off our payroll. You might yet get to be president of Iraq. Maybe even get your DVD collection back.
You think so?
My friend, I know so. We have Iraqi focus group results from last night that back me up. But the Pentagon classified them. I'm doing what I can.
Jake, if I do get to be president, you've always got a position in Iraqi National Bank waiting for you.
You know that's not why I'm in this game.
I know.
But if you do get to be president, just one piece of advice.
Anything.
Take your time putting up a statue. When a con cons a neocon, he gets conned right back. There were no focus groups, and there was no movie in the plane. But it only seemed fair, for a change, for me to tell him what he wanted to hear. End the partial diary for the third week in May, 2004. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
Change.
Ladies and gentlemen, carrying forward the theme that we are all the same, here's what I would have done if I'd had this money. You know, we in the wake of 9/11, we were told in this country we are all New Yorkers now. 6 months after 9/11, Congress approved an $8 billion program to repair New York's damaged office towers, build apartment buildings, and finance the rebirth of the downtown financial district. 2 years later, city records show that much of the money, Liberty Bonds, has gone to developers of prime real estate in Midtown Manhattan and Brooklyn and to builders of luxury housing. That's what I would have done. We're all the same. We're all New Yorkers. Local and state officials, over the objections of their own downtown development chief, gave one developer $650 million in Liberty Bonds to erect a Bank of America office near Times Square, miles away from Ground Zero. Yeah, but it's, you know, it de-Disneyfies Times Square to have a Bank of America building there, don't you think? Don't you really? According to city records, another developer got $113 million to build a tower for Bank of New York in Brooklyn. Hey, the banks are doing well. One of the few projects downtown has gone to Robert De Niro to build a boutique hotel in Tribeca. That's at least near Ground Zero. Congress designated $1.5 billion of the Liberty Bonds for rental housing. Nearly all of it has gone to prominent developers to build luxury apartment towers in the neighborhoods around Ground Zero, accelerating its transformation into one of New York's richest neighborhoods. That's what I'd have done. Local political leaders, urban planners, and neighborhood residents have sharply criticized these spending choices, saying that wealthy developers shouldn't need subsidies to build office towers in Manhattan, where private construction is booming, or luxury housing downtown. The critics are missing the urgency felt in the weeks after the attacks to retain businesses in the city, say New York officials. We didn't put a lot of strings in the Liberty Bonds, says U.S. Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney of New York. A lot of this money has been spent on projects that fit the letter of the law, but not the spirit. Ladies and gentlemen, it's nothing I wouldn't have done. Don't be hard on them now, ladies and gentlemen. That's two ladies and gentlemen in 4 seconds. I gotta knock that off. It's time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Jeremy Sivitz wept and apologized after receiving the maximum penalty of a year in prison and a bad conduct discharge this week in the first court-martial stemming from the abuse of Iraqis at Abu Ghraib prison. He pleaded guilty to 4 counts of taking pictures of naked Iraqi prisoners being humiliated in some of the photographs we know and love so well. Spooked by reader complaints and canceled subscriptions, the Lowell, Massachusetts Sun has apologized to its readers for publishing a photo of two men kissing at Cambridge Hall on Monday, the day same-sex marriage became legal in Massachusetts. In an editorial, newspaper official said the image represented shock value, something the paper tries to avoid. To some readers, the photograph pushed the envelope too far, the Sun editorial said. Those contacted by the Sun said it represented an unnecessary in-your-face intrusion, especially for parents with young children. The editorial said if the staff had the opportunity again, it would most likely choose a different, less intrusive photograph. I guess the envelope pushed back. Macedonia, part of the former Yugoslavia, has apologized for the murder of 6 Pakistanis by its security forces 2 years ago, in a conspiracy supposedly intended to curry favor from America in the war on terrorism. Macedonia's deputy interior minister met Pakistan's ambassador to Turkey in its capital, in the Macedonian capital, and gave assurances that his government was committed to punishing the guilty. Six Pakistanis and one Indian were killed in the conspiracy. They were migrant workers passing through the country looking for work in Western Europe, but they were described as Mujahideen. In what is described as the worst scandal to hit the Balkan nation, the government last month charged the former interior minister and six security force officers with murder, alleging they staged the ambush to win international attention for their efforts to fight terrorism. At least eight Palestinians, many of them children, were killed by Israeli fire Wednesday as they demonstrated against military operation of the Israeli military operation in Rafah. Israel apologized for those deaths, saying its troops did not deliberately fire on marchers. A preliminary army investigation concluded a warning shot fired by a tank flew through a building and hit the crowd, security sources said, on condition of anonymity. Swiss President Joseph Deiss has apologized to Russian leader Vladimir Putin for an air collision that killed 71 people 2 years ago. That was Europe's worst mid-flight collision for a generation. It was blamed on air traffic control failures. An official report by German investigators detailed glaring inadequacies at the Swiss air traffic control service, Skyguide, which was criticized for inadequate staffing, organizational failings, and insufficient emergency training. See, it's not just us. Only one controller was on duty the night of the crash, with an out-of-order phone system and a computer network reduced to fallback mode due to maintenance. Sounds so familiar. U.S. Republican Jack Ryan hired a photographer. He's running for the Senate in Illinois. He's a Republican. He hired a photographer to videotape his Democratic opponent. He was behaving so much like a stalker. Got up and personal. The Ryan campaign is now offering an apology and ordering the tracker to back off. "I offer an apology on behalf of the campaign," said Bill Pasco of the Ryan campaign. It's ordering staffer Justin Werfel to back off and videotape opponent Barack Obama from a distance when the candidate is in Springfield. Now, that's the capital of Illinois. Don't get excited. After Obama accused Werfel of virtually stalking him in the state capitol for the past week and even recording personal phone conversations from 2 or 3 feet away. He was following him into elevators and even to the bathroom. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. The apologies of the week. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast, as is this. Let's see if we have time for this, because I haven't done it in so long. I am going to read the trades for you. This is from Current, the trade magazine of public broadcasting. PBS program executives plan to begin a formal process of judging primetime programs by predetermined goals, including minimum audience ratings and other factors. Programs that fail to meet goals may lose PBS funding or slots in the schedule. This responds to station leaders' concerns that the network's current evaluation standards aren't rigorous enough. Says John Wilson, co-chief program exec. Yes, that's right, they have two. Quote, "The stations want us to use audience estimates as part of our criteria for greenlighting shows or continuing them." "All of our programs are excellent and educational. That's a given," says co-programmer Jacoba Atlas. "Where some of our programs are not as strong as we'd like is in their ratings, a highly contentious issue in the system. We think the right thing to do is create a ratings floor for all of our programs." "Evaluating programs against these measures may result in the elimination of several familiar and longtime programs or series," PBS warns in its new program plan. "It must therefore be done very carefully." The proposal surprised public radio execs, public television execs who advise PBS on program strategies. The question is, how much weight will be put on the shoulders of ratings and ratings alone? Says Margaret Drain, National Production Chief at WGBH in Boston. I'm concerned about shows that may not have the widest audience that nevertheless are important. Too bad, babe. That's me saying. That was me babing Margaret Drain. Something that isn't supposed to happen when I read the trades for you. That's the wrong piece of music. Where would the right piece of music be? Where do you think? Where do you think it would be, ladies and gentlemen? Where would it have gone? Oh, this is so embarrassing. I think it's right here, where I put it away for safekeeping, so I could play it for you right now. Because the computer system was on maintenance mode. And that is going to conclude with that exhibition of broadcast professionalism. That's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facility of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.4 and 5 megahertz. Around the world via the internet at two different locations. Anytime you want it, live and archived, harryshear.com and kcrw.com, that's on your computer. And now available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow. And it'll be just like us all being really the same if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. Le Show comes to you from Century of Progress Production and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.